I've been having issues with Chesterfield Royal Hospital acting in a manner that I believe amounts to discrimination and failure to make reasonable adjustments. It's specifically around the accident and emergency department, and on occasion the wards as well, where they fail to make any kind of adjustment or adhere to any kind of care plan that you put in front of them. It's just completely unacceptable. Because I've been legally blind since 2016, over the years I've developed a condition called hyperacusis. It often comes in tandem with other conditions. For example, people who are autistic often have sensory issues, and this secondary condition comes as part of it. But in my case, it's developed through years of having to rely more on my hearing because I can't rely on my sight. And over time, my hearing has gotten so sensitive that even small sounds that normally a person wouldn't be bothered by can cause me physical pain.
And is it that sort of situation that you were facing in the waiting room area of the hospital?
Yes, we went to the accident emergency department in August 2023. It was quite noisy, it was very busy, and I was really struggling with the noise levels at the time. We were there because my husband needed to be treated, but obviously I was with him because he's got dyspraxia himself. I asked one of the nurses for access to the quiet room because their website at the time specifically advertised that their new A&E department had an area for people with neurodivergencies and sensory issues. So I asked for access to that quiet room, and the first response that I got was, "You're not even the patient, so why does it matter?" Which that wasn't particularly pleasant to begin with. But then from there, it evolved into the room can't be staffed. And later over time, I found out the room was never even usable in the first place. It was never in a condition to be used. Literally every time we go is a bad experience.
And you've taken this down a legal avenue.
Yes, I have filed lawsuits against them twice now, and we've just settled the second one.
And tell me a little bit about the Equality Act, because they have to make some kind of adjustment. Is that right? Tell me more.
Yeah, basically, the Equality Act of 2010 exists so that people with disabilities are not unfairly impacted by policies or facilities that would impact somebody who's able-bodied. For example, in this specific instance, the Equality Act would be that if I asked them for access to the quiet room or a quiet waiting space, and they responded to me saying, "We can't do that because we don't have enough staff to operate that room," they would be required to make an adjustment to that policy. Because if it's policy that you have to be watched at all times by a staff member, the Equality Act would require them to adjust that policy so that I do not have to be watched if it allows me access to that room. And it's called what's reasonable adjustment. And it's not a universal term. So reasonable adjustments can be anything. The law doesn't actually set out what a reasonable adjustment is. It's basically a point on which the two parties must agree that something can be done to adjust policy or facility, whatever it may be that's affecting the person with a disability, so that they can be treated like any other person.
Because I was reading through some of the notes about your case, and there was a time, for example, when they said, "Oh, you can go and wait in a corridor," I think, but then you didn't hear your name being called. So that wasn't really usable. And then there was another time they put you behind a curtain in a ward, but that wasn't any less noisy than the waiting area was.
Yeah, unfortunately, they have been less than understanding when it comes to adjustments. They've refused to make them on any occasions, really. And even when they do agree to make them, like for example, the rare instance that you just mentioned where I agreed to go and wait outside of the department, what the reasonable adjustment would require in that case would be for them to come to me and tell me when it's my turn to be seen. Because obviously I'm not in the waiting room, so I can't hear my name being called. And every single instance where they have promised that they will come out and let me know when it's my turn, they've broken it. They cannot be trusted to uphold their end of the bargain. And they're still doing that now. That's actually happened as recent as this Saturday just gone. The reason why I've approached the media with this is I believe very strongly that people need to be made aware that the hospital is not doing their part. Because one of the reasons that I settled the lawsuit that's just gone through, the second lawsuit, is I have agreed what's called a care plan with the hospital. And that goes through the safeguarding team who have agreed upon all the points in this plan as what is reasonable, what can and cannot be done, etc. And in that care plan, there is points such as on my plan, there is a point that states that my husband, who he doesn't have quite the same level of sensory issues as me, can go into the department, ask them to check the system for my care plan, hand them a piece of paper that has all of my details on it. It's got my name, address, any allergies that I have, etc. He can hand that to them and they then don't need to have me go into the room to give them the details because it's all on the paper. And they are then required to either find me somewhere quiet to wait, or if that can't be done, I'll wait outside the department and they are required to come to me and let me know when it's my turn to be triaged. And even as recent as this Saturday, they broke that almost immediately. The first time I've used it, the first time I've gone into the hospital for what really ought to have been classed as an emergency, we've gone in there and they've immediately broken it. They can't be trusted to negotiate in good faith and to uphold their end. It's got to stop. The response that we got when we said, you know, have you not seen the care plan, which we know they had seen it because my husband saw it come up on their screen, and we had handed them a physical copy. They claimed, and this is an exact quote from the nurse that came out to me, we don't have time to read everything. I've got 50 patients in there, and if they all had care plans, we don't have time to read them all.
And I'd just like you to touch upon a couple of other aspects to the care you've received. One of them surrounding your guide dog and the other around staying overnight at the hospital and having your partner with you, your husband.
Yes, with my former guide dog, she has now retired. There were occasions where, under normal circumstances, wherever possible, I would try and find someone to have the dog for me while I'm admitted into the wards, because obviously, you know, it's not ideal really to have the dog with me on the ward. There are instances where it's not possible to find anyone. So on such a couple of these instances, I was in the ward. The nurses were talking about how I shouldn't have a dog on the ward. And I could obviously hear these voices saying these things. And I immediately took issue with it, as well as should, because, you know, I have a legal right to have my guide dog with me. When it was brought up to them, they attempted to say that other people might not be comfortable with a dog in this area, which it doesn't matter whether somebody else is comfortable with a dog or not. That's a fully trained working guide dog. But, you know, they seem to believe that they could try and prevent me from having my dog with me. And they attempted to say that I couldn't have her with me while I was there.
I see. And what about, obviously, as somebody who's visually impaired, staying overnight in an unfamiliar surrounding is difficult. What reaction did you have when you tried to have somebody to help you with that?
Well, because I'm legally blind, in an environment that I cannot control, such as a hospital ward where things are always being moved, things are never in the same place for more than a few minutes, I can't freely navigate. I have to know my environment to know where I'm going and where things are. So when I'm in a hospital, I have to have my husband, who is my full-time carer, with me practically 24 hours a day. This is something that is an absolute requirement. Otherwise, I would be pressing the buzzer for the nurse every few minutes whenever I need something. If I needed to find something that's next to the bed because somebody could have moved it, I'd be buzzing for the nurses left, right and centre. And obviously they're very, very busy people. They've got probably 50, 60 patients to deal with per nurse. It would be too much to ask of them. So as a reasonable adjustment, both for myself and for them, I require that my husband stays with me while I'm in the hospital, which would require them to make an adjustment to the visitor's hours. Because under normal circumstances, a visitor can't be in the hospital past these hours. So they would be required under the Equality Act to make an adjustment to that policy to allow him to stay with me.
And when you've sort of tried to get that reasonable adjustment, they haven't been so welcoming to having him there, to even giving him a blanket?
Oh, no, they gave him nothing most of the time. But in all the instances in the cases that we filed, they provided him with nothing, not even a pillow. And they're actually quite hostile towards him being there, always questioning, like, why is he here? Why haven't you gone home? Do you really need him? Things like that. They're actually quite hostile. And it's gotten to the point where he's actually, for want of a better word, he's usually afraid for his own safety when I go into the hospital.
What do you put all this down to?
Honestly, I wouldn't put it down to lack of resources, because the thing about reasonable adjustment is it's not set in stone. It's not concrete. Anything can be a reasonable adjustment, even if they can't necessarily provide what's required. Any sort of offer for an adjustment is a start. So even if they didn't have the resources to do one adjustment, they could offer something else in its place. But instead, it's always just been an outright, you can't have this, you can't have that. Speaking personally, obviously, I don't work for the NHS, so I'm not privy to the ins and outs of how funding and policies and staffing work. But to me, I genuinely believe that the A&E department for Chesterfield Hospital believes they're above the law, believes that they can be exempted from the Equality Act. And they actually did attempt to use that argument in the lawsuit. They argued that because they're an emergency department, that by nature, emergencies cannot be planned for, and that therefore they should not be expected to make a reasonable adjustment because they cannot plan for them. And I reject that argument in its entirety, because no one should be exempted from at least trying to make reasonable adjustments. But they seem to think they don't have to. Because it happens literally every time we go, I believe it's not just a couple of bad apples. It's the department as a whole.
And it's surprising to me that it's in the NHS.
Hospitals are supposed to be places where people go when they're in an emergency, you know, when they are in need of help and support and healing. But to me, that hospital is a place of fear. It's a place of, when I'm in crisis, I don't feel safe to go to this place that's supposed to be sanctuary for people who are in crisis. I don't have that safety from them. To me, the hospital is not a place of safety. It's a place of fear, and somewhere where I feel, you know, I fear that I'm going to be mistreated. And it shouldn't be that way. Under normal circumstances, people are told, go to the hospital if you feel like this, if you feel that low. Go to the A&E department and they will help you. But to me, the A&E department is the worst place I could go if I'm in crisis. I am extremely disappointed in Chesterfield Royal Hospital, because when I filed this lawsuit against them, obviously I went into this lawsuit because I had no other choice. You know, they weren't following the law, they weren't doing as they were meant to do. And one of the reasons that I agreed to settle it, other than the restrictions that legal aid placed upon me, one of the reasons I agreed was that I was reminded that they could make me a care plan. And the fact that I agreed to this settlement with that in mind, that this care plan could be made and put in place, and it's immediately been broken, I'm beyond disappointed in them, because they should know better. It's beyond disappointing. It's beyond ridiculous, even. It's not just me that they've done this to. There are other people that I have heard walking out of that A&E department saying about how they've been denied access to advocates, or the care plans haven't been followed. There are people out there who aren't as strong as me, who haven't got the bravery to stand up and say, this is wrong and it needs to be addressed. That's one of the reasons why I keep pushing back against this so hard, because I feel that other people, as well as myself, deserve to have someone fighting for them. If they can't do it themselves, then I will do it for them. And if it has to be me that takes on that burden, so be it.